Hello, welcome to the Ryzen podcast. My name is Torishedu Omagbemi, and I'm your host. Today, we'll discuss building a high performance and health driver culture at work. And I have with me Ayotunde Yoloye. Ayotunde Yoloye is the Chief Executive Officer of Creative Learning Concepts Limited. Prior to Creative Learning Concepts, he was a director at PricewaterhouseCoopers Nigeria, where he spent almost 17 years in the human capital, learning and education, assurance, advisory, performance improvement, and internal firm service units of the firm. Welcome, Ayo, to the Ryzen podcast.
Thank you so much for having me today.
Great. So, Ayo, we'll just quickly go into the discussion for today. And the discussion is around building high performance and health driver culture at work. We know that there's a strong relationship between performance and our health. And what we're trying to look at how we can ensure that there's an equilibrium, there's a balance between performance, productivity, and health. So the conversation on employee performance and health isn't new, in my opinion, but has there been any change with the pandemic? Please tell us, Ayo, has there been any change?
Well, I think there have been a few changes. Like you said, health and performance has been something that organizations have faced for a while. But a few things come to the fore as a result of the pandemic. One, there are the specific health issues in terms of the exposure that people have to health issues. And then as a result of the pandemic also, there have been a number of changes in the ways organizations have had to operate. And so organizations have had to try to balance these two areas. So for one, a major development that has occurred is that organizations have got to develop new learning strategies. If you see, the pandemic resulted in many organizations having to find ways of working remotely. They had to run their businesses without actually coming together. And this has resulted in, you know, new approaches, finding new approaches to do their work. Now, contingent on that, therefore, you have the situation where you need to, as it were, retool your people or get your people equipped for the new environment in which organizations work. So I think that's one thing that has come to the fore. Another thing, it may not be such a big issue in this environment, but in some other environments, the nature of health plans has also, organizations have had to take a look at the health plans they have for their people. Essentially, their key issue is being able to cover their people, but at the same time manage the costs, because the cost of health plans generally seem to be going up. Mm. So you'll find organizations trying to shift the burden of those health costs to their people, and other organizations also trying to find ways of managing those costs by applying creative methods. Mm. Then there's also the issue of staff productivity. I mean, the pandemic has resulted in a lockdown. Lockdowns have varied from country to country.
Yeah.
But some cases they've gone on for almost a year. And so you found that for some organizations where remote work had been something they've done before, they've probably adapted a bit faster.
Yeah.
But for other organizations, they've had to struggle with the fact that they need to, their people are working remotely, but yet they want to ensure that they are being productive even as they are working remotely. And that in itself is a challenge for people. Mm-hmm. One of the ways organizations have gotten around this issue is by deploying technology. But again, you will find that organizations are at different levels in terms of their appreciation and use of technology.
Yeah.
So for many organizations, that's an area where even if they're not playing in that space, they just had to go in there and find out how to leverage technology to deal with the fallout of the pandemic. And then I think finally, there's the whole issue of work-life balance and flexibility of work, because there are many dimensions to the pandemic and the ensuing lockdown that followed. So you've had, for instance, where schools were closed, you couldn't take your children to school or daycare. And at the same time, you know, you're saying work remotely. So you are stuck at home with children, and you know, there are all kinds of things you are suddenly trying to balance, which you didn't have to balance before. So on two fronts, front of the employee who has got to try and balance those issues, and then also from the organization who have to recognize that these issues exist and allow or find ways of ensuring that people can still cope and be productive at the same time. So I think these are some of the new challenges that have also come to the fore as a result of the pandemic.
Fantastic. Obviously, no doubt, the pandemic has introduced a lot of other complex dynamics to this space of performance and health management for the workspace. Now, let's talk a bit of culture. What are some of the cultures that drive high performance, please, Mr. Ayo?
There are a number of things that drive high performance. I think within any organization, leadership is important. The quality of leadership you have and the type of leadership that you bring to bear within the organization, I think, is critical. And some of the things that are important for leadership in particular to do is they need to be able to articulate clearly the vision and the mission of the organization. I mean, in the sense that, you know, they've got to be able to sell the vision. They've got to be able to share what it is they want to achieve in such a way that it is sufficiently compelling for the people who work for them to buy into that vision. Because I think one of the major drivers of high performance is people sharing the vision of the organization. You know, you find that organizations that sometimes they struggle with poor performance, the real issue is the people who are expected to drive the performance have not really, as it were, taken ownership of the business, and they don't really also share the vision. They don't really share the same vision as the leadership or the organization itself. You know, and you'll find that for many organizations, you know, even when they recruit people, people may come in for rational reasons. So people may join an organization because, you know, they think they've got a good profile, the pay is good, and they get a little bit of exposure. So there are all those issues that people consider when they come into an organization. But what makes them stay and what makes them perform is the fact that they have actually, they have a bigger reason for wanting to work. So either they enjoy the work, they believe that they are doing something of real value, they can see the purpose of what they do at the end of the day. So I think that that culture of being able to share, get your people to share and believe in the vision is one thing that's fundamental. A second dimension of that is what I think is typically described as employee engagement, which is is like a corollary of the first. And that is that people need to believe in what you do and take a certain level of ownership for what they do. So you have people who are working in the organization, not because they got a job, but because they believe they are part of something bigger and they own that part that they play. You know, so they see themselves as really adding value to something of real importance. And that comes, I believe, by employee engagement, which can happen in a number of different ways. So for organizations that get employees to be able to take ownership for what they do, they are more likely to see superior performance at the end of the day. Two other issues I think are important here. And the third one is organizations that are learning organizations, so organizations who are focused on learning and innovation, usually do very well in terms of performance. And that's because, I mean, just like the pandemic taught us, the environment is never static. Things are always changing. Government regulations, you know, it could be the pandemic, it could be technology. So the environment is constantly changing. So you've got to have organizations that are sufficiently agile, sufficiently nimble to be able to see that, hey, the game is changing on us and they are sufficiently agile to be able to respond. So they are learning from customers, learning from staff, learning from other organizations, and constantly reinventing themselves so that they always remain on the cutting edge. So I think that's probably one of the most critical things. Organizations that are strong on learning and innovation. And then finally, in the area of managing their talent, because organizations achieve a lot of things through people. So managing their people effectively, particularly I think in two areas, their reward systems, having reward systems that are clearly linked to performance. So people can see that when I perform, there are these rewards that support what I do. So a culture of rewarding performance. So you're not particularly rewarding things like tenure, you're actually rewarding performance. So a performance-based culture helps. And then secondly, you have clear performance measures and you are measuring on a range of issues. So it's have a sort of balanced scorecard in the sense that you are looking at a number of different measures. So how satisfied are your customers? What's the quality of the service that you actually offer? How efficient are your processes? How are you reinventing yourself as you go along? What kind of financial performance are you? What level of growth? So you have performance measures on a range of issues, and particularly those areas that have been identified as being crucial or critical to the success of the organization.
Absolutely.
So where you have an organization that has these at its core, culture, employee engagement, learning and innovation, talent management, and a leadership that has been able to articulate a clear vision, and get the people to share the vision across the organization, you are likely to find that that organization will achieve superior performance at the end of the day.
Fantastic, Ayo. I like how, there's a logic behind what you just analyzed, you know, the connection. So you see leadership setting out clear vision so that people don't just impute energy. They have an understanding of where all of this is leading to in terms of high-level goals, objectives of the organization, and how they now break it down into, you know, smaller activities that they perform, that they own. So because they understand how these activities, these small activities, day-to-day work, sort of accumulate and add up to the big goal, they are motivated, you know, to keep putting in that small work, because they understand how it is going to, in the long run, contribute to the entire organization's growth. And, you know, you speaking about learning and reinventing a learning culture, you know, where constantly organizations are looking for better ways. They are open to how other things are done elsewhere, you know, better ways of doing things, especially, we can't overemphasize with the pandemic that, you know, came upon us post-pandemic. Agility is the word for the day. And then, you know, talent management, obviously reward and recognition. Thank you so much, Ayo, spot on. Now, let's take it a bit further. Let's now move into what are some of the cultures as well, but cultures this time that will drive employee well-being, because we just speak about performance. So let's talk a bit of well-being. So what are some of the cultures that would drive employee well-being, please?
Thank you, Toju. I think when we look at employee well-being, I think it's first of all important for us to understand the wider picture of what we mean when we say employee well-being, because sometimes when you think about health and well-being, the first thing is, okay, we're talking about physical health, making sure that people are strong and healthy to come to work and work, and which is true. But that is just one of, I think, several dimensions that organizations need to look at when it comes to well-being. So you need to look at the physical health of your people, which is what most people look at. But then you also need to look at about five other dimensions. You need to look at their emotional health or their emotional state. So what frame of mind or feelings do these people bring when they come to the workplace? What's their mental health like? How are they doing spiritually? What's their financial health? And what's their, will I say, social health? So I'm saying in those six broad areas, the organizations need to be concerned. You know, and if you are going to look at employee well-being, you probably need to look at it from these wider dimensions. So when you look at this six dimensions, you then ask and say, okay, so really what kind of culture do you want within the organization that can address these six areas? I think first of all, recognizing that the issue is broad is important. So again, having that understanding, and therefore trying to create work plans or work processes recognize the importance of health and well-being. So for instance, you can think about a number of things. So let's say in the physical space, for instance, you can look, say, you know, people, for instance, need a certain level of exercise, people need a certain level of mobility. And so you can decide in terms of even the design of your office, you know, you a place maybe where your office is on levels, people need to do a little bit of steps, maybe have a gym in the office and so on. You can have meetings, for instance, where you have stand-up meetings, walking meetings, and so on. So basically, organizations recognizing that health and well-being is important and trying to institutionalize into their processes an acceptance or a recognition of that fact. So then, for instance, you could have a situation where the way in which timings of meetings, the way travel is scheduled, may be done in such a way that you ensure your people are getting sufficient sleep, for instance. Providing knowledge to people in terms of the things around first aid and mental health, making sure that your people are a little bit enlightened. So I think in terms of the culture is essentially one that recognizes the importance of health and well-being. And then secondly, because it recognizes that, it then, you know, structures a lot of the activities that they go about in that organization to support the health and well-being of the people. So also, you will look at, you know, a culture whereby benefits planning, for instance, recognizes the health and well-being needs. So for instance, you know, if you look in certain places where there are certain what I'll call stressors, certain things that give the people a lot of stress. A person is in the office, for instance, and is thinking about, how's my kid going to be picked up from school? I've got a one-year-old baby and all that. How is that baby going to be looked at when I have all these extra hours at home? So the organization itself needs to have recognized that some of these things exist and then structure itself around that. So in terms of the benefits that may be made available to people in terms of health plans, in terms of options instead of salary that can, you know, there's this scheme sometimes described as flexi benefits, whereby rather than taking your compensation in cash, you can decide and say, okay, I want to give up so much of cash to be able to have registration of my child in XYZ school at a discount. Yeah. Or I give up so much cash to get so many extra days of leave in a year because for me, maybe I've got health issues and so I need to address those things. In some cases, they have health plans whereby you know they can do free screening and stuff like that to help people in their health. You can do financial education and so on. So, but you look at the benefits that you are able to give to your people that can actually improve their health and well-being for those who actually feel that those aspects of their lives are really important. So that culture of ensuring that your benefits are again recognized is important. And then, like I think I've mentioned earlier, the office infrastructure, you can design your office infrastructure to support, healthy lifestyles, the seating arrangements, the work plan. You can have people, you know, changing locations within the office from time to time just to get people to move around and support their health. So I think the key thing in the area of culture, one is understanding the wide dimension of employee well-being. There are those six broad areas. And then organizations that do well are those that design the organization to recognize and support their people in each of these six broad areas.
Fantastic, Ayo. Thank you so much. So from what you've said, we can clearly see that performance, well-being, the two different things, you know. But let's have a conversation around, is there a meeting point between these two different parts, you know, employee performance and their health? If there is, where's this meeting point between both, and how does the quest for both spark productivity?
Now, that's very interesting. You know, when we talk about employee performance and health, they actually do appear separate, but at the same time, they are interconnected. And in fact, Absolutely. It's very difficult to separate one from the other. And why do I say that? It's like you've got an employee who works within an organization who has a specific role that you want him or her to perform. So the person has a task to perform. But then at the same time, his ability to be able to perform that task effectively is to a great extent or to some extent a function of the individual's health and well-being. Absolutely. So if the individual is not doing well mentally or physically or emotionally or even socially or financially, any of those dimensions, it affects his capacity to be able to put in his best on the job. So the two parts, I think, are interconnected. And therefore, organizations need to find a way to be able to balance, get the balance right. Now, for them to do that, I think they need to understand the trends in their specific environments. Because the truth is, I don't think that the environments in different places are the same. So what might be a big issue in one country, for instance, may not be such a big issue in other countries. So for instance, I mean, if I use Nigeria as an example, in Nigeria, we have a very large youth population. In fact, I think the statistics show that the youth population, tonight, the population under 30 is easily about 60 to 70% of the total population of the country.
Yeah.
So if you take a window and say, let's look at people between the age of, say, 18 and maybe the age of 60. And I'm saying this because I think, okay, this is roughly the age of people who, in a sense, will be in employment. So typically some people will be in university, but once they finish secondary school, out of school, they're in some kind of employment. So in our environment, you've got a lot of young people, but with the environment we have, our environment environment is probably what I would call a high-stress environment. So even though it may not be something that's looked at so much here, mental health might be an issue in our environment because of our stress levels. In other clients, you may find that they don't have such a high youth population. In fact, they have an aging population. Mm. But a population who, for instance, want to work a little longer, maybe because of improvements in health quality and so on, you find that people who would typically retire at 60 are still active till they're 65, 70, and some of them are still in the workplace.
Yes.
But you begin to have, you know, in those cases, issues of, you know, other forms of health issues. Maybe in some cases, you might have issues of obesity, issue of some chronic diseases, and other things that may affect people. But what I'm saying is that the demographics are different, and therefore the issues that people may have will differ from client to client. But whatever those issues are, you find that those issues, one way or the other, are impact on the capacity of the people within the work, within the organization to perform.
Mm.
So what's important, I think, is finding the balance in this area. Getting a work culture that promotes and institutionalizes good health and well-being practices. Very important. And I think there are roles for both parties to play. So in getting that balance right, because I think in getting the balance right, what you get is you have people who are very, what's the word? They are in good health, they're in good frame of mind, and they have the right capacity to be able to produce and give their optimum to the job. So getting that balance right, I think, is important.
Yeah.
And there's a role for both parties. So there's a role for the organization in terms of creating the enabling environment for their people to thrive, both in terms of performance and in terms of their health and well-being. Then there's also the role for the individual himself to ensure that he handles himself in a way that ensures that he's healthy and in the right mind to be able to produce. And so when you look at employee performance and health, I think those two dimensions, when the balance is gotten right, then you are now able to get people who will achieve optimum productivity. And because the level at which, you know, their health and well-being has been taken care of and their ability to perform on the job is actually somewhat in balance.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I think the last point for me is my take home, because we may be just tempted to throw all of the work on HR, on management, on leadership, but we have, as a matter of fact, a lot of the task on our hands as individuals to ensure that we stay healthy, even as much as we rely or hope or put our weight on the organization's leadership to create the enabling environment for our health.
Absolutely.
To try.
Absolutely.
It's important that we understand that we have a lot of personal work to do in terms of managing our health. Thank you so much for that point, Mr. Ayo. Yeah. That takes us to the next point of discussion. One can easily attribute performance to hard work. I have heard this a lot of times, and show me an employer that doesn't like a hardworking employee.
Yeah.
I'll show you an employer that doesn't like his business.
Yeah.
Everyone wants an employee that is hardworking.
Yeah.
But can we always attribute performance to hard work? Is this really the case? Can hard work, in another sense, impede high performance and well-being? Mr. Ayo, please tell us.
Like you said, every employer likes hardworking staff.
Mm.
But the real question, I think, is what work are they doing? So hard work in itself is good. I mean, the attitude, the fact that people are ready to apply themselves to the task is something that's desirable.
Mm.
Yeah. And it's something that I think is required for high performance. You rarely get people who are high performing who are not hardworking. But hard work in itself does not necessarily guarantee high performance. But where you see high performance, the person is likely to be hardworking. And why is that? Because I give an example. I had one or two staff. You know, I have this staff, very, very, very enthusiastic, ready to go beyond the call of duty, ready to work long hours, ready to sacrifice a lot of stuff. But still, when you see what the staff produces at the end of the month, you're like, hey, you spent 30 days producing this work. I could produce it in 3 days.
Mm.
But this person has been vigorously working for 30 days. You can't fault the person on commitment.
Yeah.
But you are not seeing the productivity. Also, sometimes hard work, if it is not properly channeled, can actually be a setback. You know, so somebody is working long hours and they say the person is working, but the long hours are actually detrimental to his health, physical health, detrimental to his mental health. It could be ruining his family life or his marriage. So socially too, the person has problems, but the person is working hard. So hard work is desirable, but it's not sufficient to guarantee high performance. So hard work must be coupled with working intelligently, what you might call smart work. Yeah. So smart work in itself can guarantee high performance. But I feel also, you know, that sometimes it's like we are splitting hairs, because I feel you can be smart, but even when you are smart and you're working smart, you still have to work hard to really achieve exceptional performance. So I see hard work as an integral part of smart work, but it is working hard, doing the right things, doing things intelligently, that gives you the results at the end of the day. So performance, hard work is important to performance, but it's important that you need to work smart. And for you to work smart, it means doing a number of other things beyond, you know, working long hours, putting in a lot of effort, because those things can drain you physically. They can also be inefficient when it comes to looking at costs. So in smart working, you are looking at a lot more planning, a lot more in terms of strategizing to get the right approach. You sometimes find that in this area, you are actually leveraging technology to see how you can improve on either the speed or the efficiency of what you do. You are rethinking your workflows. You are rethinking your strategies. And sometimes changing your paradigms or your mindsets so that, you know, so that you are not, you know, sometimes we get stuck in a rut in the sense that we've always done things in a certain way. And therefore, because we've done that way, we tend to define success as only being achieved in that way that we've always done things. But when you take a step back, you can actually find and say, well, success could actually look a little bit different from what we have been calling success. So sometimes you need to look and actually redefine what success means in your environment, and therefore focus on those things that actually guarantee you the success at the end of the day. And that, I think, comes by working smart. So once you've been able to do those things, then you put in a bit of hard work and you also see the exceptional performance coming through at the end of the day.
Fantastic, fantastic. Hard work is good, but not sufficient enough for productivity. Hard work needs to be, you know, integrated with smart work. Thank you so much, Mr. Ayo, for those wonderful points made there. Now, what steps? So this will be specifically for leaders, HR managers, just name it, listening to this podcast. So please, can you help us with clear steps that organizations need to take in building high performance and health culture at work? Clear steps, please.
Okay. Well, a few things. One, I think, is for organizations to find a way to leverage on the individual strengths of their people. I think that diversity brings a lot to the table in many organizations. So you've got people with varied backgrounds, varied experiences, who can bring a lot to the table if we find a way to identify what those individual strengths are and to leverage upon them. And you can do that by a number of ways. One is you can actually profile the various personalities within an organization, so you find out what their strengths are, what kind of work they are best cut out for. So they're actually, in a sense, like I say, scientific methods which you can use to try and determine that. But even sometimes, if organizations don't have capacity to go into that detailed level of review and analysis, recognizing the fact that individuals have strengths. So you may find, for instance, that there are some people who are not very good in terms of planning and strategy. You know, they're what I'll call detailed thinkers. They're not the analytical people, but they are assertive, they are goal-oriented, they are people who can push and get jobs done. There are other people who are people-oriented, you know, they know how to manage relationships, but they may not be good analytically. There may be people who are analytical, but, you know, they don't really engage people a lot. So everybody's got their strengths.
Yes.
So organizations being able to identify where the strengths of their people are and put people into the areas of their strengths, very important if you are going to succeed. Secondly, organizations need to be very strong on performance measurement and performance management. So clearly, people should have clear goals. You know, no ambiguity in terms of the goals that are set for people. If people know what they are being asked to do and what they are being measured against, then they are more likely to be a bit focused. Leaders also need to achieve what I call a unity of purpose and not necessarily a unity of command. And that is to say, it's important, I sort of alluded to it earlier, that people need to share your vision. People need to understand what you're trying to achieve.
Yes.
And also have a certain level of flexibility to apply their own initiative within boundaries to be able to deliver the shared vision that we can see. A lot of the time, why people tend to have problems is they don't really know where, they can't see, or they don't really understood where you want them to go. And so sometimes they're taking you somewhere which is not quite where you want the organization to go. But when people have clarity as to this is what we are trying to achieve, this is where we are going, then you unleash them, you know, to release their potential. You find that sometimes there's a lot in those people that is latent, that until they are given the ability to express themselves, you are not able to see it. So I think for having a leadership that is able to ensure that there is unity of purpose, people working towards a commonly understood goal or objective without necessarily being all under the direct command of leadership, allowing people to express themselves, I think will work. Then, also looking for people whose values are consistent with high performance or with performance generally. So people, for instance, who value excellence, who value integrity, who value teamwork, you know, who share values that support high performance. It's important to be sure that those are the kind of people you have within your system. And then finally, take a look at your reward systems. Be sure that your reward systems are rewarding performance. Because when you have systems that are tied to performance, and you'll be amazed the change in the mindsets of people. I remember a time when we had a performance scheme for staff, and we found, when we were sharing information with staff, the staff found that they were achieving their revenue targets. We were not making profit because costs were out of control. So and at that time, there were staff who just felt, well, we met our revenue targets, pay us our bonuses. And we're like, there are two dimensions to this business. There's the revenues and the costs.
Yeah.
So they began, what are all these costs? Why are the costs so high? And we began to say, well, we've got power bills that are high. You know, we've got cost of stationery and stuff that are being used that need to be paid. So we gave it a little bit of an overview of some of the things that constituted costs. And what we found that was when people understood what those costs were, you actually see change in behavior. So for instance, typically where you would have told staff that, look, switch off the lights, make sure the equipment is switched off before you leave the office. The last person who leaves, make sure you switch all those things off. And people would just walk out of the office. They wouldn't care if the lights were on or not. They just leave the air conditioners, go home and expect somebody to switch off after them. But when they realized that, hey, power bills are actually eating into our profits and was eating into their profits, they now looked at the lights on when they were leaving or the ACs that were on. They didn't just see lights or ACs that were on. They now saw their performance bonus running away. So when you've got
very interesting.
You have reward systems that are linked to, you know, performance measures. Sometimes it just helps people reset their minds.
Yes.
And then to think a bit more about the end results at the end of the day.
So interesting. That got me laughing. How a light bulb, you know, can negatively motivate. Oh, fantastic. Fantastic. So interesting. Thank you so much, Mr. Ayo, for that. So you touched on this earlier on, but I want us to, you know, look at it again. We're going to be talking smart work, and we're going to be talking work-life balance. So we want to look at this from the perspective of work-life balance. Now, what should be the priority, you know, for the workforce or for organization? A focus on smart work or an environment that seeks to find the balance between hard work and smart work? Now, I know that I have a friend, you know, who shared a story with me. He came on board a role and obviously started spending less time that the person he succeeded in the role, you know, spent on certain tasks. And his manager became worried because they felt like he wasn't coming in, you know, all sweaty or coming out of those tasks or sweaty. They felt like he was just doing something funny, something too smart, something fishy. So instead of, you know, giving him a pat on the back, instead of saying, wow, you're doing, you know, instead of celebrating his smart work, there was a touchlight on him, like, check this guy, there's something wrong, something is happening that's not nice. Because for that organization, you know, there were a lot of priority, there were a lot of celebration on hard work, you know, people come in very early, leave late, work out of work hours, you know, they're sweating, tie down, trousers folded up, you know, show that hard work. And I know a few others like that I've heard of. So what should be the priority, you know, for organizations when we look at this from a perspective of work-life balance, please?
Okay. As you were speaking about your friend's situation, it reminds me of a formula that my boss in my early days of professional practice shared with us. You know, and the formula, you know, he always used to write on the board when you came in and you were trying to give explanations for the difficulties you had in achieving an objective or fulfilling an assignment or a task that had been set before. He would write on this board in his office, and he would write this formula, which was R is not equal to MR plus E.
Okay.
R is not equal to NR plus E. And then when he writes it, so when you are talking, we just point at the formula. And what that formula stood for was R was results.
OK. Okay.
So NR was no results, and E was explanation. So he would look at you and say, results is not equal to no result plus explanation.
Mm.
So he was trying to say that, look, in this organization, we're not interested in stories. Just give us the results. That's what's important. You know, but in my environment, sometimes people like to give explanations. You know, they tell you, oh, how difficult it was. I tried to see the man. I couldn't see him. There was so much traffic. We went. It was difficult. You know, so and it's almost as if I tell you a sufficiently interesting and pathetic story, it excuses my inability to deliver the results. So there's no result with plenty of explanation. So, and somehow you find that sometimes that sort of flies in some environments. But the ideal, which comes to the core of this question we asked, which focuses around smart work and linking it to this example of your friend, is that what should really be important is what is the result we want to achieve. So for instance, is the result that we need to see you sweating? We need you, is 12 hours in the office from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. Is that what constitutes result? Or is it, you know, the tangible or the deliverable output at the end of the day that we are looking for? So the management themselves need to be clear in their mind, what does success look like? What results are we looking for? I think once you define what that result is, then the next issue is then to look and say, how do we work as an organization to be able to achieve this objective with the resources we have within the costs that have been set for us? So that to me brings us to the dimension somewhat of working smart. Yeah, brings us into the dimension of smart work. I see that smart work is a balance between two things. It's a balance between effort and strategy. Strategy in the sense that you need to think through and find out and say, okay, this is the best way for you to do something or the more efficient way to do it. And then we also need to apply ourselves to be able to do the work itself. So I think that, and then you need to have the wider view, you know, because I think this work-life balance, sometimes the question arises because people sometimes in organizations tend to see that the life of the staff outside of the office is not their concern. But what the matter is, if you've got a guy working for you who has not paid his children's school fees, whose child is sick in the hospital, coming to work for you in the office, he may be physically there, but mentally and emotionally, he didn't come to work. His mind and his emotions are somewhere else. And so I think smart organizations just need to recognize that we need to find a way to support people, I think, support our people or equip our people to be able to deal with these challenges at the end of the day. So if you ask me, I would say that you need an environment that, in a sense, finds the balance between smart work and hard work, even though I have said that I believe hard work is encapsulated
in
smart work. But I think there's an element of balance, recognizing that, you know, it's there are many dimensions. There are many dimensions to success. So you can't look at success and say, okay, if you've got financial performance or growth, that's success. If all your staff are dissatisfied, if your staff turnover rate is 50 or 60%, but you met your financial targets for the year, have you really succeeded? You understand? Because next year, you've got to find new people. What's the cost of training? How much time are they going to need before they go up the learning curve and get up to the same skill as the people that left? So I think the smart organizations are the ones that see that a lot of these things are interconnected. And they've got to put their finger on the pulse in the different areas of the business. And that, I think, takes a lot of thinking. And I would say that to me is what I would call smart work or smart leadership. Smart leadership to also lead organizations to work smart.
Absolutely fantastic. Thank you so much for that time. So to end this conversation, let us turn our attention away. Let's turn our attention away from organizations, leadership, and let's look at the people, right? Beyond organizations, what simple things can individuals do in their everyday lives to keep performance high and ensure a good, healthy state?
Okay, I think there are a lot of things that people can do. Remember, I said that the healthy state, you can look at it from six dimensions: physical, emotional, mental, spiritual, financial, and social. So even basic things that people can do, for instance, make sure you have a good meal. There's some people who work and they skip their meal. Then they get home at 9 o'clock and then eat one heavy meal and go to sleep. So little things in terms of being disciplined, in terms of your eating, for instance, ensuring that you're not sitting at your desk all day, but that at least you move around a bit, and mobility helps you get enough sleep. So these are things that can help you physically. Financial planning can actually help you. Somebody once described something. He said you should go on a spending fast. A spending fast or a financial detox. there's some people who, they just see things and they need to buy.
Yes.
And
yes.
That to buy puts you under unnecessary financial pressure.
Absolutely.
So sometimes on a financial fast and solve any of your financial problems. So, people who are, I don't have enough money, but come and, see me at the end of the month, I'll pay, So at the end of the month, you've already spent 50% of the salary and all that. So I'm saying these are little things you can do. In terms of your emotional stability, you can, find time to laugh, go out, spend time outside, sometimes do a reality check on yourself, so that you're not taking also life too serious. So I think these little things you can do. Work with a calendar, and put time in your calendar for yourself. So, a lot of time when people prepare calendars, it's all about work. They're not planning time, So plan time to give yourself a treat, for instance, and then, celebrate your successes. You may not necessarily be able to achieve anything. So you want to do 10 things in a day and you do 6, that's okay. You can do the 4 tomorrow. I mean, you may have wanted to do 10, but hey, you got 6 done. So even if you are knocking yourself for the 4 you didn't achieve, then at least, congratulate yourself for the 6 you do well. I think that some of these little things, also on the social level, you can do an act of kindness. It's interesting when you do something to help people. The kind of good feeling you get because you've made life better for people. So on the health and the well-being side, I think these are some simple things that people can do that will actually improve their health and well-being. And then, of course, in terms of performance, I think also giving a bit of thought, taking time to think through what they are doing. Sometimes I find that people, are so eager to get the job done that they don't spend time to think about what they are doing and find more efficient ways of doing what they do.
So
I think that even just looking at, what you are doing, giving time to think, spending what I would call, maybe you would call it a quiet time, but being quiet to plan, to plan your day, to set meaningful goals. For a week. I know people who, what they do is at the beginning of every week, they have a plan for the week. So, you know, because time is a very valuable resource, you know, yes, a lot of people push into the week. Mm-hmm. They just get and say, well, we'll play it by the air, whatever comes, goes. And you get by during the week. But you are a lot more efficient when you plan the week, you schedule quality time to, that are important, you are able to prioritize work and ensure that you schedule time to get the work done. And you need to do review meetings, you know, have review meetings to look at how well you are doing, and then you can recalibrate. I think these are just very basic things. It's not rocket science, but the results you can get can actually be phenomenal from just doing these simple things.
Absolutely. Thank you, Mr. Ayo. I think the emphasis here is there is a part for us to play, you know, in informing our performance and our well-being. There is a part for us to play, and it's important in finally, you know, dictating how we perform at work and our mental and physical well-being. Thank you, Mr. Ayo. It's been my pleasure having this chat with you, and it's been a wonderful conversation. We hope to have you again on the Rhizome podcast.
Thank you so much, Toju. I'll be glad to come on the podcast anytime you give me a call. It's been very nice talking with you.
Fantastic. Thank you for listening to the Rhizome podcast. We've been discussing building a high performance and health driver culture at work with Ayotunde Oloye. And it's been a wonderful discussion. We hope to catch you some other time. Keep listening to the Rhizome podcast. Thank you.